We have a live mic. Any shuffling or talking you do will be caught by the mic, okay?
Okay, thank you. Good morning. Welcome to today's meeting of the Orange County Housing and Community Development Commission for Thursday, October 26, 2023. If you would please stand and join me in honoring the flag of our great nation. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to move on to the agenda for this morning's meeting. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. Public comment rights are not unlimited and do not include the right to defame or slander, the use of profanity that causes a disturbance or disruption in the proceeding and is truly objectionable is not allowed, and it may cause us to have to take a recess from the meeting. Public comments must be within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. As such, attacks on persons who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the commission will not be heard. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Good morning. Yes, Ms. Ann Nguyen. Second call for Ms. Ann Nguyen. Ms. Tracy Law. Second call for Ms. Tracy Law. Mr. Mike Alvarez?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Stephanie Odom?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. James Nye?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Wayne Carvalho?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Carla Wilkerson?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Helen Smith Gardner is excused. Mr. Mike Frost?
Here.
Thank you. And Ms. Cecilia Huff?
Here.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we have quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin. If you wish to comment on a specific agenda item in person, please complete a speaker request form identifying the item's number, your name, and deposit the completed form in the box that's located next to the clerk. To speak on a matter not appearing in the agenda but under the jurisdiction of the HNCD Commission, you may do so during public comments items at the end of the meeting. Speaker request forms must be deposited prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of the individual agenda items, the opening of a public hearing, and or the beginning of public comment item. When your name is called, please come up to the podium and begin your comment by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks and questions to the commission. Speakers may address the commission on up to three occasions with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion.
Thank you. And just to note, Julie is not able to attend our meeting today, but all other staff is in attendance. We're going to move on to the approval of the minutes. For this item, Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
Madam Chair, no requests to speak on approval of minutes have been received.
Okay. I would entertain a motion to move agenda item 5.
I move to approve the minutes if there are no changes by any of the commissioners.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Motion was made by Mike Alvarez and seconded by Mike Frost. Excuse me. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We're going to move on to the funding allocation policy and process presentation from Craig Fee.
Morning, Chair and Commission members. Craig Fee, Housing and Community Development. I'm here this morning to go over one of our processes that we do every year. It's called the FAP, Funding Allocation Policy and Process. Basically, what that document does, it's a county-generated document that we've used in the past 15, as far as I've been there, 12 years. It basically tells the public what we plan on doing with next year's funding. So it's basically the start of the funding cycle for 24, in this case, 24-25. It's a forward-looking document, and it follows our citizen participation plan. It basically says when we go out with federal funds, we have to go out for a public review, which is out right now, as far as showing the public what we plan on using, and they can comment to it. They can comment online. They can comment at the board, because this is a board agenda item, or they can comment to me directly as far as what they think about it, what they think should change, what we should add, what they like, what they don't do not like. We take that into consideration. We actually publish it as well at the board for any further comments. Part of the FAB is also falls the five-year consolidated plan, which is basically a plan that we do every 5 years that takes public input and says and establishes high priorities for HUD federal funds, meaning CDBG, home funds, and ESG funds. Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnership Grant, and the Emergency Solution Grant funds that we receive every year as a grant from HUD. The consolidated plan basically is done every 5 years, and the annual action plans, which we do every year, are an update to the consolidated plan. Back to the FAP. The FAP involves the Urban County, which is basically the 13 participating cities and the unincorporated areas of Orange County. I should be doing this, you're doing it. What the participating cities involve is cities with populations of 50,000 in pop or less, or cities that could be entitlement cities. Entitlement city meaning a city that can receive funds directly from HUD, but they've opted as a metropolitan city to go under the county's umbrella, basically, to have the funds funnel through us and go to them. Therefore, they eliminate gobs of paperwork. So they, because if they got the funds on their own, they would have to do an annual plan, they'd have to consolidate a plan, they'd have to do a CAFR, they'd have to make sure all of their projects are eligible. We do that all for them for half of their admin costs, which is a deal. next. High priority needs that were established from last year and from the consolidated plan. They haven't changed a lot in the previous years, other than because of the COVID pandemic, we added urgent need as a high priority. The high priorities at this point are senior centers, homeless facilities, neighborhood facilities, water sewer improvements, street improvements, sidewalk improvements, and urgent need. What we do with public comment, and I've already had a few community meetings and went to a few community events, which I'll be doing all throughout Orange County, to I actually hand out surveys and talk to people and ask, what's important to you? In your neighborhood, what do you see needs to be improved? And I talk to them, I have them fill out surveys, I tabulate all that information and compare it to what we have now and see, did the priorities change or not, or are they same? Or is one a lot higher than the rest? Like, obviously, urgent need went through the roof during the COVID pandemic, so we focused a lot of our funds towards that process. The performance objectives are a HUD-established description on what we have to report on. There's three different performance objectives: sustainability, which means keeping something that's in use. Basically, we keep upgrading it to make sure the public can use it, which streets, sidewalks, ADA ramps, lights, water, sewer, all the high priorities. Decent affordable housing, we rehab low-income housing in communities, you know, participating cities and the unincorporated area to make sure that their houses are up to code, there's no safety violations. If they have leaky roof, we fix the roof. Mobile homes, we fix mobile homes. You name it. Right now, the county's in charge of just the unincorporated area. However, some of the smaller cities do have their own rehabilitation programs as well, which we fund to them directly with community development block grant funds. Another grading factor are outcomes. I mentioned the annual action plan before. The annual action plan basically sets the goals of what we're going to achieve with the money that we received following the FAP. So in the FAP, we said we're going to do this with the money received. We got the money. Here's the goal, directly related to the FAP. And then that goes into the CABR, which is Consolidated Annual Performance and Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report, which basically grades us on what goals that we set. We said we're going to do this, we did this. So we're going to do 10, we did 15. So we did 8, we did 7. And that has turned into HUD, and HUD grades us on that. Basically, the performance outcomes, and the outline is in your packets, is availability, accessibility, which basically infrastructure, affordability, back to housing again, and sustainability for projects in neighborhoods. That's where the public outreach comes in. Where we're at in the process. Because the consolidated plan is every 5 years, the annual action plan is every year, and the FAP is every year as well. Right now, this coming year, 24-25, we're going to be in the second year of our housing rehab funding cycle, which is basically on a 3-year cycle. So at the last year, we went through an RFP process for all the participating cities or jurisdictions to apply for housing rehab funds. That's a 3-year process. For public services, it's on a 3-year cycle as well, but it's non-competitive. Because of the reduction in CBG funds over the past 10 years, last 3 years it's been flat, 4 years it's been flat. But because of that, we don't get a lot of public service funds, so we're basically doing it towards the community centers that the county owns for homeless services. All of our ESG goes to homeless services and emergency shelters of Orange County. Public service improvements are on an annual funding cycle, and that's one of the things that we're recommending changes. We've always gone through an RFP process, which request for, you know, stands for
request for proposals.
We've gone through that process, which is a very time-consuming process. You have to go out, they fill out an application, the application comes in, they have a length of time to do it, it has to go through threshold. Once it goes through threshold review, it goes through an evaluation committee, which is evaluation committee of, it used to be 3, now per county policy it's 5 people, and they grade the applications on content in the application, and they're ranked on a point scale. Since I fund here, we've funded every single project that's been eligible to be funded. So I suggest that we go with an RFA process, which is similar to an RFP process, except it doesn't go through the evaluation committee. Once the activity or project passes threshold, it's guaranteed funding. It may not be guaranteed funding in that current year, but it will be guaranteed funding. So it's not like they have to reapply every year. That is a change because we didn't want all of our cities and us and everybody else to go through the process, and it takes 2 months to go through that process. After the FAP goes to the board on 11/28, if it passes, we used to put the RFP out the next day, now we're putting an RFA out. Permit summer, it's not due till January, passes threshold, that starts the annual action plan process. So then we get ready for that, which is due to HUD in May. We usually come to you and the board in April. As far as stopgaps for those, we've come up with a couple options. Say we did have enough money to fund all the projects. We have to come up with a public way, everybody knows getting into this, what's going to happen if they don't make the cut the first time. The first option is if the funding shortfall is $500,000 or less, we will cut each of the applications by a set percent to get the $500,000 met. So we can still fund all the applications that were applied for, just a little bit less than what they actually applied for, which some of them don't use all the money anyway because sometimes it's hard to judge. If the funding shortfall is over $500,000, we're going to apply option one, which is reduce it by a percentage. And then we're going to take and fund everything we can, and the ones that we could not fund will go on to the following year and be funded on a priority. So they'll be funded first compared to anybody else who applied the next year. So they will be funded. If there's a tie, as far as these say these people were funded for 3 years and somebody was funded for 5 years and 6 years, the 2 3-years would take priority because they were funded less than the 4 and the 5, but they tied. So how are we going to break the tie? We're going to say, okay, when you were funded, how did you perform? Did you spend all your money? Did you spend it on time? Was your project managed correctly? How much involvement did we have to get or give you, which has been a lot. There's been a lot of turnover. COVID turned over everybody in all the cities practically. So there's been quite a bit of training going on, but basically we had to find some way to fund them that's reasonable. Other than that, any questions?
Any questions?
I have a question. You mentioned that you were going to centers and presenting. When and where does that happen?
I reach out to everywhere. I went to the unincorporated areas already. Now I'm looking at North County and South County. We're trying to have different approaches as far as getting the public involved. When there's a community center or a senior center, I've got a captive audience. I can go in, they're there for something else, I can speak to them and ask if I can speak to them, first of all. And if they're interested, then I speak to them. I did go to the El Medina. They had two fairs, but basically for the city of Orange. I piggybacked on top of that. I went to Anaheim, I can't pronounce it. The community center in Anaheim. They had a fair as well, and we represented this process there. Midway City, I mean, they're redoing their parking lot right now, which was delayed for 2 weeks, so this week I was supposed to go there. I cannot. I'll be rescheduling that in 2 weeks, so I'll be out there and getting their input as well.
Yeah, the reason I was asking that is I know that the members of the public and stakeholders would probably love to hear from you.
I do every type of outreach that I can. For the consolidated plan, it's even more. We're trying to put our heads together as far as reaching the public to get interest. I mean, if you're in the neighborhood, it's one thing. If they travel somewhere, it may not be in their city, in the city next door, but it affects their city, because it's South County or North County. I don't get a lot of response. So my method of advertising needs to be upgraded, basically. So now we're posting information at community centers, at libraries, just to get it out there to the public. It's always on our website, it's always in the paper, but people don't necessarily read the paper or have access to the website.
So Craig, you mentioned that the RFP process takes a couple of months. This new streamlining, how much time will that shave off the process?
A month.
Okay, that's significant.
Yeah, because once once the applications pass threshold, mm-hmm. It's yay or nay.
Okay.
And we do that in one day.
Great. Okay.
So, there at the beginning of January, we'll know who is going to be recommended for funding, and we'll come here and let you know as well. And then it's obviously, the annual action plan is a board item, so it will go to the board after that.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
Okay, you mentioned that all projects in the past have always been funded.
Correct.
So the two options that you mentioned, in case there wasn't enough funding, that's something new, right?
Yes.
So my question is, in the past, whatever funding we had, was there ever a surplus? And what happens with the surplus? Does it just get rolled over to the following year?
Yes, we basically have three sources of income as far as we'll go to community development block grant. We have funds that received for that year, which is the grant. Every year we get a certain grant. We also have what we call, reallocated funds, which is funds that are left over. So say somebody had a project they thought was gonna cost $200,000, they only spent $180,000. Well, $20,000 of that's gonna go back to the reallocated fund to be funded towards another project in the future. We also get what's called program income. from past projects. Community development used to be a lot larger and have a lot more funding than it does now. We invested, like when we do rehab on a home, we would do loans. Thank you. We would do loans instead of grants, but you got to monitor those loans every year. And that can be affordable housing up to 55 years. But for us, depending on how much the loan is, it's usually 4 to 10 years. They did 10 years back then. So in 10 years, we're supposed to collect that money. Well, from what I've seen, you couldn't afford to do your roof 10 years ago. How can you afford to pay for it now? You can't. So we spin our wheels trying to collect funding, and I end up telling legal, write it off, because you can't get money from them. They didn't have it then, they're not going to have it now. So we switched to the grant program. I'll get to the point. The grant program basically says after 4 years, you're done. You don't have to stay in the unit. You don't have to stay in the unit. Because right now we require them, if we do the roof for $20,000, they have to be there for 4 years. And after 4 years, they can sell it if they want. But in those 4 years, it goes down 25% each year. So first year, they have 75%, second year, they have 50%, like that. But if they go to 4 years, it's wiped clean. What program income comes in is when the prior loans came up, they pay us back. So we take that program income, put it back into the unallocated fund, and that's where the funding comes from. And if I have extra funds, I will tell cities, apply. Think of something. I went and contacted all my participating cities this year and asked them. PFNI, it's an RFA process, it's easier. And some cities that have not applied for PFNI since I've been here said they're going to apply. I go, I've been working with them. Where are you at? What do you see? What does your community want? And I'll tell them right then and there whether it may or may not be eligible, so they don't waste any time. They can always work with my staff and myself to go through that process. Because my job is to get the money spent.
Anything else? No? Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.
Very nice. At this time, we're going to move on to public comments. Members of the public may address the HMCD Commission regarding any items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the Commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time has expired. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
Madam Chair, no requests have been received on item number 7, public comments.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have no consent calendar items, so we'll move on. We have 3 items on discussion. I will have January Johnson present discussion item number 1.
January Johnson, talking about item number 1, the discussion calendar. For those of you who have been on this committee for a long time, you probably have heard this spiel a lot, but for those of you who have not, on an annual basis, HUD requires the Housing Authority to review our utility allowance. And when we're reviewing our utility allowance, you have to review it by bedroom size and by each allowance offered to the public. And then you have to make sure that if there is a change in the utility costs in that community by more than 10% for any one of those allowances, either say a 0 bedroom or water heating, there's a 10% change there, we have to make a change to our utility allowance. So we do this every year, and it's published in October, by October 1st. We use a third party company to do the analysis of what utility costs are in the community. So NELROD is the company that we use in order for us to determine whether or not there are changes. There has been a change from last year to this year, so you'll see a change in that utility allowance for every bedroom size, electric, water, heating costs. So that specific cost you will see has gone up on this utility allowance for 2023-2024. And for 5 bedroom units, air conditioning costs have gone up, but the air conditioning cost has remained the same for 0 to 4 bedroom units. So you're going to see that change on the utility allowance. For a little idea of what the utility allowance actually means for our clients, is the utility allowance is literally an allowance. It's a credit back to the tenant. So the higher the utility allowance, the lower the rent is that our tenants will have to pay, because it reduces their obligation of their 30% of their income towards rent by the amount of that utility allowance. So if their rent, their 30% is $300, and that utility allowance is $100, they only now have to pay $200 towards their rent. So the higher the utility allowance is actually a benefit to our tenants. The reason why I'm saying that is because you'll probably be hearing a lot of discussion about energy efficient utility allowances. And energy efficient utility allowances mean that our tenants have a smaller utility allowance and they will have to pay a higher portion of their income towards rent. Housing authorities do have an option to adopt an energy efficient utility allowance. OCHA has not adopted an energy efficient utility allowance because it does not benefit our tenants. But what we have done, because what we're hearing from the community, is that a high utility allowance impacts affordable housing developers' ability to incentivize them to build energy efficient buildings. So for the first time this year, we have also incorporated a waiver process. So if you are an affordable developer in the community who is going to have Housing Authority or OCHA vouchers in that building, will allow you to do a waiver and use the California Utility Allowance Calculator, which is essentially actual utility costs for that building. So they'll go in, they go to the state of California, and they'll find out what the actual utility costs are for the building, which will reduce their overall cost, which incentivizes them to build with solar or to build with electricity instead of building gas in their affordable housing developments. So that's kind of our bridge or middle ground between an energy efficient utility allowance and help supporting our clients with a higher utility allowance and schedule. Do you guys have any questions about utility allowance?
Any questions?
Jane Marie, is this the numbers, are they a blend of all our different communities?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
That's why we rely on a third party.
I know, I was going to say, it's quite complicated. All right.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a receive and file item only. Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on this specific item?
Madam Chair, no requests to speak on discussion item number one have been received.
Okay, thank you. And we'll move on to discussion item number two, which is the 2023-2024 payment standards for Housing Choice Voucher Program. And Jenny Ray Johnson, you're back up.
Hello again. For the recording, Jane Ray Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority. For, again, this is something that happens on an annual basis, so if you have been here, you've heard this spiel, but for those of you who are new, on an annual basis, HUD will release their fair market rents for communities across the country, and they require housing authorities to review those fair market rents and establish a payment standard between 90% of that fair market rent up to 110% of that fair market. In order for the housing authority to establish that payment standard, we have to go through a number of different tests to see what our tenants are paying. So if their portion of rent, we'll do an evaluation by bedroom size to see how much our tenants are actually paying towards their rent. We say all the time that tenants are required to pay 30% of their income towards rent, but the moment they move into a unit, if their rent increases so that their portion increases, we do not require them to move. And so what we will see is that somebody may move into a unit for 30% of their income, but after they've been there for several years, their portion of rent has now increased 40, 50, 60% of their income towards rent. So what our job is to make sure that what we're doing is our payment standard is increasing as market rents are increasing, so that that same family who remains in that unit when their rent increases come, their portion of rent remains at that 30% rather than increasing to 40, 50, 60%. So we will review all our bedroom sizes for everybody that we serve, and we will do an analysis to find out how many of those families are paying higher than 30% of their income towards rent. We will have some families who will naturally pay higher because they will have chosen to remain in a unit that they are maybe overhoused for. What that means is maybe somebody's eligible to a one-bedroom unit, but they're choosing to live in a two-bedroom unit, and so naturally a portion of their rent is going to be higher than 30% because they are choosing to remain in a more expensive unit than they are actually eligible to. So we also take that into consideration when we're doing our analysis. Based on that analysis, another piece of information that's kind of new for people who have been on the panel, about 2 years ago, HUD changed how they determine their fair market rents. They used to use an analysis that wasn't based on actual rents in the community. It was based on a kind of an archaic process. They've changed it 2 years ago. Now they base their fair market rents on exactly what the rents are in the community that you're looking at. What we saw was those fair market rents jumped significantly from 2020 to 2021. There was a huge jump in the amount that they said that we could start looking at when we're establishing our payment standards. They've decided that that process is more representative of what's happening in the community, and they've kept that process. So what we're seeing is if you're doing something right, if your fair market rents are more representative of the community, you should be basing your payment standards closer to 100% of that without having to go over it, because it is more consistent with what the real rents are in your community. With that said, last year our payment standards jumped very high. This year, an analysis showed that we are not seeing a lot of our families paying more than 30% of their towards rent. So we're doing something right. So when we did our payment standards this year, we didn't have to do as high of a jump in order to bring that number down, because we were already serving people at what actual rents are in the community. So we did have a few areas where we needed to update it, which we did. So you'll see in some of the South County areas, we've updated some of the numbers there. And there are an increase across the board for all bedroom sizes and all payment standards, but just not as high as it was the previous year, because now it's more consistent with what we're seeing. We went from approximately 30% of our families paying between 30 and 40% of their income towards rent. Now it's down to 18% of this change. That 18% is consistent with the number of people who are overhoused in our community. So that's a little update on our payment standards. Does anybody have any questions?
Mike?
Did you find that once you started going to market rates that people that are looking for housing had a broader view, or not a broader view, a broader choice of housing that they could consider now?
Absolutely. We did see there's more decent concentration and people had an opportunity to live in more communities in the county without actually having to pay more of their income towards rent, which was a great thing.
That's great, too.
Nice. Okay, Michael?
I was trying to follow along when you were talking about rent increases, and I was struggling. How do we ensure that the rent increase is reasonable? Are we looking at that as on a case-by-case basis?
So we have to process each rent increase as they come in. So we have a team that does process our rent increases. We do make sure that it's compliant with the law, and we are watching that. Prior to AB 651, I believe, is a law. So but prior to that law, it was more internal. Our process of making sure that, you know, having communication with the family, having communication with the landlord, when we were seeing that those rent increases would really impact the families. But now we have a lot to help back us up, so we do review each one individually.
And if we do define that it's unreasonable, what do we do?
If it's not in compliance with the law, then we communicate that to the landlord. And so the landlord then has a choice about whether or not they want to continue to serve our client or
and then the client may have to go. Okay.
We find that landlords are generally compliant and communicate well with us, especially if it's the law that is telling them what they can and cannot do, as opposed to us telling them what they can and cannot do.
If it, I guess, is unreasonable, do the tenants have the opportunity to say, I will go ahead and pay more than my 30%, or?
If the amount is increased and it's compliant with the law,
okay,
and the tenant wishes to stay there, they absolutely can.
Okay.
So if they want to pay 90% of their income, yeah, towards rent, that's their choice. We do not require tenants to know. We do have a conversation. We do make sure that they are fully aware of what this means, but it's their choice.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. You might as well just stay there.
I know, I was wondering.
Okay, this is also a receive and file item. Madam Clerk, do you have any public comments on this specific item?
Madam Chair, no requests to speak on discussion item number 2 have been received.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to discussion item number 3. That's the 2023-2024 payment standards for emergency housing voucher programs.
January Johnson again from the Housing Authority. So I gave you guys a big background on what payment standards are in the previous one. So the reason why we have two different payment standards, when HUD introduced the Emergency Housing Voucher Program a couple years ago, it's targeting a population that is chronically homeless, has specific challenges, and with that in mind, the understanding that a higher payment standard may be necessary because they may have less income coming in, and they would be less able to afford any sort of unit that's out in the community. We are approved to establish payment standards up to 120% of the fair market rent for our Emergency Housing Voucher Program. But we have to do the same test. We have to find out how many of the participants in this program are paying higher than 30% of their income towards rent. And with our already established payment standard that was put into place in 2022, we found that a very small percentage of people were paying significantly more, 30%, higher than 30% of their income towards rent. So while we did increase the amounts for the Emergency Housing Voucher payment standard to 105% of the fair market rent, which is higher than the traditional payment standard, it didn't have to be increased significantly because we were not seeing a lot of families impacted by paying more than 30% of their income towards rent for this particular program.
Okay, any questions?
No? I have a question.
Sure.
So, I don't understand the line between what's, you know, emergency and then the other standards.
The program, the program itself, because of the target audience, the challenges that they're encountering are significantly higher. And while in California you can't discriminate against somebody for income, when you are leasing to them, essentially you can't deny them for having a voucher, they still count that voucher amount as part of their income. And these particular households tend to have very little to no income.
Okay.
And so that higher amount will allow them to qualify for some of the more expensive units.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, this is a receive and file item. Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on this item?
Madam Chair, no request to speak on discussion item number 3 has been received.
Thank you. Okay, and there are no public hearing items, so we're going to move on to reports of staff and or commission members. And we'll start with Community Development Director Craig Fee.
Good morning. It was a long walk. I reported on what's happening right now in community development. Next time, I'll start with the annual action plan. But the VAP is what we've been focusing on. And we're starting the annual action plan and the new RFA process we're going through. So that's all I've got.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll move on to housing development with Michelle Zadiba.
Presented on, provided a report on our previous project review advisory panel meetings. And since that meeting, and now we have not had another project review advisory panel meeting. We will have one right after this meeting, where we will present on two projects that have previously passed threshold review. So I don't have a report today, but I did want to give an update that we are also reviewing our notice of funding availability, our policies and process. And so most likely at the next meeting, we will be presenting perhaps some changes and recommended changes for your consideration as well. And I don't know if anyone had any questions about anything in particular related to housing development, but I think that's all I have for today.
Any? Okay, thank you, Michelle.
Great, thank you.
Okay, and now we'll have the Orange County Housing Authority update from January Johnson.
Again, January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority. I have a couple updates for you guys. I have been talking periodically over the course of the last year about changes that would be happening to our administrative plan due to the Housing Opportunities Through Modernization Act, or HOPMA, that was passed in 2016. They were supposed to go into effect at the beginning of 2024. HUD has delayed that, and so they'll be going into effect in 2025. This is going to involve a pretty significant overhaul of our administration plan, our administrative plan that we will be taking to you guys. It includes all our processes, how we work with our clients, how we make them eligible for the program, information we obtain from them in the eligibility process. It's going to be a significant overhaul of our administration plan. So when I bring that to you, it's going to have a lot of changes, a lot of red lines, but you're not going to be seeing that until a little bit later in 2024, so I wanted to give you an update on the extension on that. Additionally, HUD brought in a bunch of changes all at once. So they also brought in a change to the way that we would inspect units. They call it the National Standards for the Physical Inspections of Real Estate, or INSPIRE. Currently, we use housing quality standards to do our inspections of our units. This is a complete change as well. It's more consistent with the way that public housing works, and it's very detailed. This will also be a change in our administrative plan that we will be bringing to you guys and explaining to you about the process. I just want to kind of start leading this in here, because as you start to get it, they are two significant changes. That was supposed to go into effect in 2024, but it is now extended to 2025. So you will be seeing that change also throughout next year. Any questions about those? Just kind of updates.
Sounds like a fun year.
It'll be a very fun year. That's busy. But the exciting thing that I wanted to share with you guys is the waiting list. I'm sure that when I talked to you guys last about our opening and closing of our waiting list, I didn't have a lot of detail for you because it was right when we were starting to open it. But now we've closed our waiting list on September 29th. I can let you know that we received a little over 61,000 applications, which is an increase from last time in 2012. About a 19% increase over the last time. After we removed the applications that were duplicates, it was mostly duplicates, we ended up with about 57,500 actual applications. And as explained previously, we would be taking 12,000 of those 57,000 to actually go on the waiting list. We will be starting to inform families starting today through tomorrow about whether or not they were selected to be on the waiting list. The process of making sure that each application was entered correctly and that we were able to communicate to all 57,000 families took us a little bit of time from the closing date of September 29th to now, and that's what that month period or three-week period is about. It's us making sure that everything is clean and perfect before we inform families about whether or not they're going to be on the waiting list. We will not begin selecting names until our 2012 waiting list is exhausted. HUD only allows you to have one waiting list, and so you can't have two waiting lists going on at the same time. We don't expect to exhaust the 2012 waiting list until about mid-2024, depending on funding. So we pull names based on funding. If we don't have available funding, then that will slow down our ability to reduce down the 2012 waiting list and then start to draw from the 2023 waiting list. Any questions on waiting list?
Any questions? Mike?
Well, I know even though they don't allow multiple lists, does the staff do a breakdown in terms of veterans, non-veterans, homeless?
Yes,
do you go through that once you solidify the list?
Absolutely. So within the list, there are preferences based on preferences established in our administrative plan that was approved by you guys and approved by the board. Those preferences are veteran first. The second preference, these are all together of equal weight, is disabled, elderly, and working families. And then the third preference is non-working families. So. Yes, within the list, there are preferences for the people who are on the list.
So there was no reason for anyone on the 2012 waiting list to apply again, correct?
Correct. If they're still active on the 2012 waiting list, there would be no reason for them to apply. But everybody was able to apply, so if you were on the 2012 waiting list, you were certainly able to apply to the 2023 waiting list, and it did not prohibit you from being on the 2023 waiting list.
All right, thank you. Our final report, January, you can just stay there.
Yeah.
Is the Executive Director Secretary's report. January will present that for Julia.
January Johnson from the Orange County Housing Authority. You guys can hear a lot from me today. I am pleased to announce that we applied for and were awarded 10 new HUD VASH vouchers. So these are to serve our veterans. In order for us to apply for any sort of HUD VASH vouchers or veteran vouchers, we have to have concurrence with the local Veterans Administration Medical Center. It's based on their capacity because they provide case management services for anybody who participates in that program. And so they need to be able to have enough case managers to support the number of vouchers that we apply for. They told us that we could apply for 10, so we applied for 10 and we were awarded the 10. We are incrementally increasing our number of VASH vouchers. I will say this is exciting because this puts OCHA as the number 17th most VASH vouchers in the country and number 6 in the state. So we have been working really hard to try to work with our VAMC to bring as many VASH vouchers to our community as possible, and I think we've been showing that we're doing that.
Great.
The second update is, I think I talked to you guys about our Section 8 management assessment program testing that we had done at the last one, our last meeting. This is basically the report card for the Housing Authority 2 meetings ago. And we had anticipated receiving 140 out of 145 points, which would make us as a high performer. We actually received 145 out of 145 points, so we got 100% on our report card. So did even better than what I anticipated. So that is an exciting announcement for you guys. And then the last thing I wanted to announce was that we have taken the proposed updates to the bylaws. They will be taken to the board on November 7th. So you guys should be able to have an update on that at our next meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, at this time, we're moving on to public comments. Members of the public may address the commission regarding any off-agenda items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the H&CD Commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time has expired. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
Madam Chair, we do have one request to speak on item number 12, public comments, and that is Denora.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm the lady from Havana, Cuba, and if you don't get housing before the holiday, I'm going to open my case in the Ninth Circuit. My voucher was stolen under my social security number at Anaheim Housing Authority. I have my confirmation number here, and David Lockwood, that it was in heart of 34-7, Santa Ana, he knew that I want the voucher. Only few people randomly was selected. My name came up, and I was told by Great State to the General Johnson, told them not to give me my voucher. And government knows that I work for 40 plus years and pay my taxes. I closed my case at the Ninth Circuit on August the 28th, and it was going to escalate until breaking news. This should have never happened to me when I work and pay taxes, and government told me they will assist me with the other percentage on my rent. And I was living for 25 years in my place, and when they told me to reach out to Julia Bidwell, that she's not here, and didn't write, so they could assist me in some kind of government program, no one gave me any appointment. And I got sick and I ended up in a hospital. If I don't find something before the holiday, I will break the news from Miami so Congress could pay attention to the corruption has been going on in housing. I've been discriminated by people from Mexico. So this happened, and I never experienced this, and I grew up in this country as a kid, brought to this country by the U.S. government, federal. Corruption is going on in federal housing, and what they're telling you here is because I have my complaint, and now they're covering up. Few people, it means 10, 15, or 20. Everybody else got their voucher living in Jobalinda Heritage Crossing, and mine was stolen. I want to know why. When everybody knew that I won the voucher and I never hand out to government. I work and pay taxes for 40 plus years. And I'm protected under federal statute because I was brought as a refugee. And I mean it, and I'm saying it. I closed my case, you told me to close it, and I did. Not to mislead me. Find me something in Jubalinda, which I grew up in 1969, when America was great. Now we got problem, corruption, and dishonesty, and it needs to stop. Now all of a sudden, Grace Tedder, that was the housing coordinator, somebody promoted her to be the director of housing in Anaheim. And back then it was John Woodhead. And I have his business card. So this needs to stop. And I'm focusing on January because she kicked in 4 years later. But in 2017, I was told to reach out to Dillian and Julia, and she never gave me an appointment. This should not be happening in this country when I was brought here by the U.S. government. Thank you. I'm hoping that they excuse me before the holiday. Thank you, everyone.
At this time, members of the HCD Commission may comment on agenda or non-agenda matters and ask questions of or give directions to staff, provided that no action shall be taken on non-agenda items unless authorized by law. Do we have any comments from anyone? No? Okay.
Impressive on the 145. Good job, Jamie.
Yeah, that was very good. Now, at the bottom of my agenda, it says that our next meeting is December 7th. I believe I heard you say we have a meeting on November 7th. No, you mentioned that earlier.
Board meeting.
Oh, the board meeting? Okay. So our next
meeting on November 7th. So I'm just letting you know by the 7th.
Okay. So then our next commission meeting is on December 7th, and we'll see you all there.
Who is on that committee that meets after this?
I am. I don't know who else.
I am.
The three of us.